The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, where we do our best to answer your questions, usually those sent in to us by email. Best way to send us a question, if you'd like us to handle one of them on the show here, would be to go to our website, jimhelps.com, or chrishelps.com. That works as well, so whichever you prefer, Jim or Chris Helps, all one word, .com. On there, there's a contact form. You can submit a question there. You can learn a little bit more about us as well. It's not just a portal to submit your questions, but that's where you'd go to submit your questions to us. And we'll take a look. The questions that usually trickle or bubble to the top of the list, if you will, are those that are on a specific topic that are kind of concise and get right to it. And then Jim always, of course, elevates to the top of the list any email with some positive reference to the New England Patriots or the state of Kentucky. So I've noticed lately there's been quite a few questions come in that people are using those code words like go Pats or something offensive like that in the message. And Jim puts those to the list because he is in control of the list. There'd be other code words if I were in control of the list, like, I don't know, jelly beans or something like that. But go Pats apparently is the is the word that gets you premium treatment here at the Retirement and IRA Show. So Jim just wandered back in with his pile of questions. I know we have several a variety of questions today. Social Security. We've had several of when I mentioned the questions that are concise and to the point get put to the top of the list. We do have some kind of monstrous questions. They're almost like a story of the person's life. Those are harder to handle in the format of a podcast, just so you know. I know you're trying to get to us all the information possible about your situation, and sometimes that can kind of quickly become three or four paragraphs of info. Those are kind of hard for us to share in the podcast format. So if you could... a lot of them are multiple questions in one email. So if you could kind of cut it down to a single question, that'll get you answered a little bit quicker. But I think here in the coming weeks, we're going to try some of these multi-part longer questions, and we'll see if we can actually handle those as well. So, Jim, what's our first question of the day?
We'll begin with...
The first main question is how do we turn on the microphone? You've answered
it. Much better.
Yes.
Hey, I'm injured. For those, I'm gonna let our listeners know I'm doing this show. Last time I did it, barely able to speak because I was sucking down lidocaine.
That's true. Remember? That's resolved a bit. That's good.
Well, no, it's not.
Well, whatever cure there is, that caused all kinds of other things.
That's the problem. So the doctor, the lidocaine folks, wasn't working. So he thought I had one thing, and then he says, "Nope, looks to me like you have another." I won't get into what he thought, and he said, "Use this medicine." And he gave me the medicine, and I have had, in my opinion, the worst allergic reaction I have ever had to anything. I mean, people in the office are laughing. I've been sleeping all day in the office. I can't think. I can't work. I'm red like a lobster.
So the perfect personality for a podcast.
Yeah, perfect. I'm as red as a lobster. I went to the doctor, folks, today because I couldn't handle it anymore. And when I took my shirt off, first of all, the nurse looked at me and her initial, I told you what their initial reaction was. Was it, oh my God, or?
It was some sort of shock. Yes. Yeah. Never good when you're the medical professional.
I thought I was going to have to pick the nurse up off the ground.
Medical professionals, when they gasp, when they see you, that's never a good sign.
Right. Well, when I took my shirt off and she saw, now, of course, most women gasp because of the rippling muscles, but you never know that under this shirt.
Oh, you hide it well.
I do. Yeah. It looks like I have a paunchy little soft belly, but let me tell you, it is a what do you call those wash things? It's a washboard, right? Isn't that what they call it? Washboard stomach?
On you?
Isn't that what they call it?
Oh, some people call it that. Yeah.
So I look like I have a paunchy little belly, but it's actually a washboard stomach. But when I took my shirt off for the nurse to see, I can't remember exactly what it was, folks. I think she said, "Oh my God," and it was quickly followed with, "Let me get the doctor." And I'm thinking, that's not what you want to be telling people.
If they start screaming into the phone, code something, you know.
And then the doctor came in, and he just flat out told me. He said, "In all my years, I have never seen a allergic reaction like you have been having." The guy's 63. So I'm in pain, but what had happened is the medicine that they gave me to clear up problem number one did clear up problem number one. My throat, Chris, is good as new.
Oh, perfect.
Every other square inch of my skin, not so as good as new. So anyways, that's what is happening this week. And it's been really tough because it also has me very, very, very tired. And I have to get yet two more prescriptions on my way home. I feel like I'm just a walking drugstore now with, and you know Joe, Tax Joe. Mm-hmm. She doesn't put anything in. The woman won't even touch a Twinkie, let alone eat it. And she's just telling me, the problem is all these medicines, stop taking the medicines. And it just, I know everyone's trying to help, but I want whatever the hell it is wrong with me to just go away.
I bet you'll feel better tomorrow. I think they're on the right track. That's my professional medical opinion.
Gee. Want me to take my shirt off?
No, I'm good. Description. Your description's been fine.
Because you'll scream, "Oh my God," and run out that door. Okay. So, anyways, folks.
So back to the show.
Now you get to know a little bit more about me. So let's get to some of these questions. I'll see how much I can do in between some of the pain I'm in. Okay.
This was no anaphylactic shock or anything. Did he give you one of those EpiPens? Well, when you have an allergic reaction, sometimes you all swell up and you can't breathe.
That's what I was wondering if he was going to do, come in and give me a shot of something, make this all go away.
If you swell up and can't breathe, that's what they're going
to
do.
No, he did wanted to know the lungs. So he's listened and, you know, cough, look over there, cough, breathe deep, cough, breathe deep, cough. And he told me, he says, "Your lungs are fine. You're not," but you're not, whatever word he used.
Dying?
No, I'm not dying. But no, I could breathe because he wanted to make sure I could breathe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where's the first state? Do we have a state on this one?
I'm not going to answer this question today. This one's more of a state. Well, I'll read it.
Question we're not going to answer.
No, well, all right. Okay. This is more of a statement, I think. It says, "Hi, Jim. I'm a Marylander here." Mm-hmm. So I would assume Maryland is his state. Mm-hmm. The show you and Chris did on your AUM model was interesting. That was probably the fee shows we did.
Yeah, we kind of railed on AUM.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was a... Did you see the Bloomberg article on Ken Fisher's firm? You got to read it.
I've read a few lately that haven't been very positive.
Oh, old employees are coming mm-hmm. out and saying yeah. what it is, what it really is. It's a call center. It's yeah. Don't get me going. Read the Bloomberg. Bloomberg's been really doing a lot about mm-hmm. what Fisher is all about. Anyways, that was an interesting show you and Chris did on AUM model. I was wondering if you were aware of the podcast Michael Kitsis did with interviewing Rick Edelman. He has a lot to say about AUM, he being Edelman. Mm-hmm. Edelman will sometimes say on his show that his firm and their clients have a joint interest in portfolio growth. Here's a link to the Kitsis interview. And I've already known mm-hmm. that, so I didn't click the link.
Yeah.
If you want, just skip to 1 hour, 4 minutes, 25 seconds, and you can hear what Edelman says. By the way, I don't know if I would advise taking on Edelman publicly. He very well likely will fire back at you. I'm not going to take on Rick directly. He just has a business model that I disagree with. The more I'm reading about Ken Fisher's firm, the less I like it. And listen to the Ken Fisher show. I forget which one it was. Was it a couple of months ago? Or was it a couple of weeks ago? Mm-hmm. This email came in October. So had it been around the beginning of October we did
yeah,
that one?
Beginning of, yeah.
And you can hear what Ken Fisher said. And what has me angry isn't the words Ken Fisher said. It was essentially that he was equating his firm will lie and deceive and say anything necessary to win someone's trust and have them transfer the money over to him. I will say the Bloomberg articles are directly attacking his fees as being high. And I will say Edelman is not cheap. He's high as well. But I think with Rick, and I could be wrong, do you get a free financial plan with Rick?
I don't know. I haven't looked at his pricing model, honestly.
I think he might give you, I wouldn't personally put much faith in it if it's a boilerplate. But I think with Rick, you get a plan as well. I think with Fisher, you just get investment management. But listener, I appreciate the email. I know mm-hmm. Michael Kitsis, I wouldn't say very well, but I have chatted with him twice. Each time led to an argument, so I don't know if we would
argue. He likes again. To argue with people. Oh, there's tons of people he's friends with.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, everyone yeah. will tell you that.
Yeah.
The thing with arguing with Kitsis, folks, if you ever have the pleasure of doing mm-hmm. so.
Do so very carefully.
Oh, he is going to make you look like a fool.
Yeah,
the guy's verbal judo is amazing.
Yeah.
He just had me bumbling and stumbling because the guy just, he remembers yeah. everything. And he starts pulling out all these statistics and facts and this, and you're just a little. It's pretty funny. So, but he and I spoke. You remember this, Chris, because I told you, hey, I bumped into Kitsis. Mm-hmm. I talked to him about what you and I are thinking of doing with our fee structure. Mm-hmm. He told me several years ago, this had to be what, now 3-4 years ago mm-hmm. now, if yeah. not more, mm-hmm. our business model wouldn't make it. We had to keep the AUM. And I was telling him, I want to go to capping asset management fees and charging separately for financial planning.
I don't think he feels that way anymore.
No.
Because he talks all the time
exactly,
about pure fee only
exactly.
and fee for service.
Mm-hmm. So at the time, though, and he laid his opinion out to me several times, twice as a matter of fact. And the first time we got, and when I say we argued, it was not a violent, it was just a he's very opinionated and so can I. And I made him late for his meeting. It was to an XYPN mm-hmm. Event that he runs. And he remembered me the second time because he's like, oh, I remember you. I was late to my meeting because of you, he said. But listener, I do know and follow Kitsis quite closely. And Rick Edelman, I like the guy. I change places with him in a heartbeat. As much as I'm starting to despise Ken Fisher, according to Bloomberg, he's worth $3.5 billion. They're tearing him a new one. They're saying, you know, his business has done great for him. but they're questioning value, fees, cost, all of that. But Chris and I, are not going to take on Rick Eidelman. Again, I respect the man deeply. He has done a lot to advance financial planning. We just disagree with his pricing model. Chris and I believe if you're going to need a financial plan, whether it's a retirement plan like we do, we have a very specialized practice, or if it's a generalized financial plan, if you're a younger folk, if you're in your 20s and 30s, getting your job started, a new career, getting a family going, you need a more generalized plan of college savings, life insurance, debt consolidation, debt management. Whatever type of plan you need, we believe the pricing should be for the plan and not based on you having to give your assets to a firm and they are going to manage it, because to us, asset management becomes the focal point. And when you delve into asset management, Chris and I feel it's not like it was 20 years ago when I got into this. And managing assets was difficult. It was expensive. We did it with fax machines and paper blotters and everything we had to do. And I was using my HP 12C to figure out rebalancing. And every once in a while, someone would write an Excel spreadsheet. And if you programmed it rightly, it would help you rebalance, but you still had to go enter the trades individually. There was a lot of work. Today, there's not as much work. Today, honestly, I've said this before and I'll say it again, and I don't need to get angry emails from other people in the industry. I question, quote unquote, advisor alpha, which is the industry term that paying someone to manage your money is going to give you more of a return because the advisor gives alpha, which is just an industry term to say, Scott is here, he can explain alpha better. Why don't you, how do you teach your kids alpha?
Well, it's alpha specifically is excess return over a risk-adjusted return. So essentially, extra return that you don't necessarily deserve based on the risk that you're taking. When I say deserve, the market is going to reward you for taking risk in investing. That's the concept. That's what the driving force is behind investing and what encourages people to invest. And the whole concept is you stick your neck out as an investor and you deserve to earn a reward for doing so, for giving up your capital to someone else or some other entity to use for some period of time. And there's a greater potential rewards on average for those who take on more risks than those who take on less risks. And alpha is a measure of excess return. So more return that you're being rewarded with for some other reason than taking risk. Some other reason in advisor alpha is mostly because of something the advisor is giving to you, and that is advice. Some type of, hey, pick this, not that. Picking winners and losers, and if you follow my lead, you can win. You can, quote, beat the market, which is another way of describing alpha. And there's those who claim to be able to do that. There's some that you might show historical evidence that they were able to do that. But the problem is you only can observe those folks generally after the fact, after it's actually happened. What I mean by that is there's certain investors, and maybe we can put Warren Buffett in this class, that have shown over long periods of time to be able to do exceptionally well, better than you might think, given the risk that they take in their investments. And so you can point to them and say, hey, you know, here's someone who's figured it out, who can generate this mysterious thing we call alpha. The problem is if you, once you know they can do it, they're retiring. You know, they've been around for so long. The key would be to identify what advisors are going to do it on the front end, you know, before they've done it for 20 years, try to pick them out of the pack. There's no ability to find those people ahead of time is the problem. So then it raises the question, what was the, you know, what really caused it? Was it because they were smarter or had a better process? Or was it because they were lucky or some combination of those two things? And so some people stop searching. They say, you know, it's not worth the search, and I'm not going to try to beat the market. I'm just going to try to invest rationally and get the rewards that the market provides to me, but I'm not looking for alpha. Other people swear that they can go out and find alpha on their own or with the help of a professional. And I think that you could find support for either one depending on how you slice up the statistics. So long answer to this is there's people who market themselves as the giver of alpha, right? We are going to provide you with a better return experience because you took our advice. Now, people throw it into this bucket we call alpha, but of course, there's variations on this alpha. Some of it is, I totally agree that if an advisor can help prevent you from doing something dumb, something irrational, and you do better because of that, you could argue that was a form of alpha, right? You did better because you took their advice. That's a little different than, you're rational, you're not doing anything dumb, you're diversified, you've decided to invest appropriately, and but you want more. You want more because you were smarter or because you were superior in your ability to pick one thing over another. That also gets thrown into this label called alpha. And that's a little harder. That's a little bit more of a stretch. So I think Jim and I have an issue mostly with one of those than the other. There are certainly reasons why you could benefit from having professional advice. But if you're not trying to do anything fancy and expensive, that advice doesn't really need to be that costly. And that's where the traditional AUM model kind of falls apart, in that it rewards those who may or may not be actually giving you something of value, at least not enough value to justify what they're charging to you. And if it's charged not on the value of what they're giving to you, but rather some other completely independent thing, that independent thing being the value of your portfolio, some people say, well, no, if my portfolio is bigger, they must be doing a good job for me. Well, your portfolio could be bigger for a whole lot of reasons, right? Maybe the market went up. Wasn't because of the person you hired, right? That it just happened. Do they deserve a reward for that? Well, that's in my mind personally, I won't speak for Jim in this, I'd say no, not necessarily. If they're providing you with something of value, some convenience, some ability to invest in things you might otherwise not be able to, some peace of mind, some monitoring and reporting and consolidation. And I mean, there's lots of other value or alpha that an advisor could provide to you if you want to throw this all into one bucket. I wish we had different terms for this instead of just alpha. But
my whole point is, because I don't want to beat this horse to death, is pricing. That's what it comes down to. I believe pricing should be clear, unbundled. When you pay by an AUM fee, an asset under management fee, which is usually around 1%, but I believe both Edelman and Fisher start a lot higher than that. But when you pay for everything, Chris, by that fee, there is no way of gauging what you're paying for.
Right.
And in the financial planning world, the initial plan is a lot of the work. Updating is a lot easier. We reflect that in our pricing because we charge direct. Our update price, we went to a new model, folks. Our update price is 1/3 of the current planning price because it doesn't take us as long to update a plan. Well, if it's not taking us as long to update a plan, certainly doesn't take other advisors as long to update a plan. Yet when you're paying them the same money year in and year out based on the size of your portfolio.
Not the same, probably more, because hopefully your portfolio is growing. So you'd actually pay more every year for what they're giving to you.
So I don't like that model because you can't see what you're paying for. You can't gauge value. When someone questions our price, they're questioning our value. They're saying, well, gee, I don't know if for the price you want to charge me, I'm going to get enough value out of that plan or not. It's hard to do that when you're paying just one big pool of money, but you don't know where it's going and what it's going to. And when it comes to asset management, you don't know if you're paying a reasonable price for the asset management or not. And to me, the biggest thing that I see a lot of investment advisors doing, and I don't know if anybody out there works with Ken Fisher or Rick Edelman's firm, do they benchmark your performance? I would be curious, because so many investment advisors, Chris, don't benchmark. They just show you what your portfolio earned. Hey, here's what you earned, Chris. Don't ask us any questions about it. Here's what you earned. And instead, we always benchmark. And we benchmark to an independent third-party benchmark. We use Morningstar benchmarks. Everybody knows Morningstar. I trust Morningstar. I like their analysts at Morningstar. So we use Morningstar benchmarks. And if somebody hires us to help them create a moderate portfolio, we're going to benchmark our moderate portfolio to the moderate Morningstar benchmark. Why do we do that? It allows the person to see how they are performing relative to a benchmark. It does no good to show you. Well, relative, I've seen them before like this, Chris. They'll show you 3-month T-bills, 1-year notes, the S&P 500 and something else. It has nothing to do with your portfolio, but I've sometimes seen them benchmarked
like
that way.
Like random benchmarks. Yeah.
And CPI. I've seen that. Benchmarked to CPI.
Oh.
And that's the one that I was trying to think of. I've seen portfolios before benchmarked to the consumer price index so the advisor could say, hey, look at this. Inflation was 2%. I earned, 4.9 for you. We are walloping inflation. You're doing really well. I've seen that as well. I hate that. They should be benchmarking to whatever it is they're trying to help you do. And you do it yourselfers. You should be benchmarking before you start patting yourselves on the back and logging into the Bogglehead blog at the end of the day and in the evening start reading what everyone else is doing and how y'all are congratulating yourselves for buying a Vanguard index fund, which we have nothing against. Our portfolios have Vanguard index funds. But I know how you guys think and act, and there's nothing wrong with that. But before you start congratulating yourselves, start looking at your performance relative to a benchmark. Are you doing okay? Are you taking on too much risk? Not enough risk? Are you performing well in line or not? That's all we're saying. And too many of these asset managers don't do that. So I don't think Rick Edelman's going to come after me. I'm like a pimple on his you-know-what. We are nothing compared to him as far as size goes. But I will wager dollars to donuts, Chris, our retirement plan probably blows his away. There's no doubt about it. The length of detail and attention that we put into retirement planning, because that's our niche, no one on that mass scale can replicate that. It can't be.
I haven't seen it yet.
It can't. The way we do it is not being replicated. It can't. We spend too much time on any one plan. So anyways, I digress. Let's move on to another one. All right. I thought I had a little easy Social Security one here for you. Yep. Okay. Very short question. Mm-hmm. This is from a New Mexican. Mm-hmm. Say I am 61 and 9 months. Mm-hmm. So I think what he or she is trying to say is they reached their full retirement. No, the 61 and 9 months. Mm-hmm. Nope. They're not quite 62 yet.
Got it.
How do I go about filing? I don't seem to see how it is done, and it is not very clear to me. Thank you. And then she put her real name, but we, as always, will protect her anonymity and call her Joe. No.
George. On this show.
Thank you.
It's like close. Close.
Well, we could call her Joe if we want.
No, this is, first of all, if you are intending to file at your first age of eligibility for retirement benefits on Social Security, that age is 62, and they recommend that you file, you actually start the paperwork about 3 months before you want to start receiving benefits. So 61 and 9 months, if your intent isn't to file until you're 66, 67, et cetera, you're way early. But if your intent to file is pretty much immediate, you're right in line timing-wise. The way you can do it is a couple things. You can go into your local Social Security office. In some areas of the country, you can go in and wait in line. Others, you have to call and make an appointment. I've heard some offices don't even take appointments. There's kind of a mixed bag depending on where you are in the country. But almost all new claims can be done through the Social Security website itself. So ssa.gov is the website. And you can go to your My SSA, which is the page on there, the link on there to your own account. If you haven't already started an account, I would say now is the time to do it. No matter what your age, you should all go in, because what you don't want to do is let someone else who's pretending to be you to start your account. It just blocks you out, and it makes all kinds of headache for you trying to take it back over. So it's a good idea for you to claim your account now. And that process will include them verifying who you are, which usually will they will ask you several questions that only you will probably know the answer to. And they're questions based on your public record and your credit report. So if you have your credit report frozen so they can't access it, that's one reason why you sometimes can't go through the verification process online. But once you get the account verified, you can start the claim right on there, and you can find, I think it's even called just file a claim is the link. It's been a while since I've been in there. I can't see what everybody sees all the time because I'm not old enough to file claims, so none of those links are valid for me in my account, so I can only see it on the occasion where I'm helping someone else do it and they come into the office and we log in to their account and I help them do things, and that doesn't happen real often. So sometimes they've made changes to the website, so I can't tell you exactly what it looks like, what it says, but it's pretty clear. And practically any kind of claim, whether you're making a claim for yourself or spousal benefits or turning on your benefits or asking for a benefit estimate statement, or they've really tried to make it self-service as much as possible. So if you're not comfortable doing it online yourself, then the best way would be to go into the office, your local office. Some people find traveling to an office away from a bigger city will get you into the office a little bit faster. So if you I've known people that would go into an office when they were on vacation, actually. It doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun, but they live in a big metro area and the offices there are all super, super busy. So they next time they're kind of traveling out of town, they drop into the office and have them help you. So anyway, those are some of the ways that you can claim. But if you're wanting to start at 62, you're right at the right time span. It takes them a while to get the paperwork processed. So they, no matter whether you're turning 62 or any other age where you're wanting to turn on your benefit, they recommend you start the process 3 months before the month you want benefits to start.
Fair enough. Okay. This one is interesting. It's another non-question question that I just thought was pretty cute. Mm-hmm. Jim and Piss.
Oh, great.
And he spelled Jim, G-Y-M.
Oh, long-time listener.
For those who don't know, I was on the phone with a insurance company rep once, and I had to give them my email, and I said Jim@JimHelps, to which they replied GYM@GYMHEALPS.com. I won't mention the name of the insurance company. I will say the gentleman was from Louisiana, though. Anyways, so he begins, Jim and Piss, although gin and tonic would be better.
Probably
That's
true.
That's pretty good. I like that.
I like vodka tonic myself, but gin and tonic.
Maybe we should change the name of the show.
Gin and tonic?
No, retirement planning with gin and tonic.
Oh.
Get it? Gin and you're retired now, you're going to have gin and tonic, but you can be gin and I can be tonic, or I'll be tonic and you can be gin. Retirement planning with gin and tonic. That'd be pretty good.
It'd be a nice spin. Yeah.
Or
we could drink on the show, too, and that would make it even more entertaining, I'm sure.
What else could go besides gin and tonic? You said vodka and soda?
I like vodka tonic.
Vodka tonic?
Yeah.
Time at playing with vodka tonic. Time at playing with gin and tonic. I can just see I'll be holding like a tonic. You'd be holding a bottle of gin. That would make a good...
Regulators will love that part.
Yeah, true. They won't find no sense of humor in that as our photo. Retirement planning with gin and tonic. But we could change it to retirement planning with Jim and Chris instead of the Retirement and IRA show. Retirement planning with Jim and Chris. You can just happen to have a gin with you and I'll have a tonic with me. Time of playing with gin and tonic. We could go down with, what do they call it? The annals of history. There'll be Laurel and Hardy. There'll be Mo, Larry, and Curly. And there'll be Jim and Chris. Or Starsky and Hutch. Jake and the Fat Man. Now, there we go. Retirement planning with Jim and the Fat Man.
Whoa, easy.
I'll be Jim. Remember Jake and the Fat Man?
I know where you were going. I know where you were going with that.
That was that show from the 80s.
I get it. I'm not going to be the Fat Man.
No, I think it'll work. Because Jim was the suave guy driving around in the convertible with all the ladies looking at him because of his nice, luscious hair.
So I should play Jim.
No, that would be me.
Oh.
Once I get stopped looking like a lobster. And then the Fat Man was, you know, in a disheveled suit, few sizes too small.
I don't dress like that.
I think it should be retirement planning with Jim and the Fat Man. I thought it was cute.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure, because you're Jim.
All right. Anyways.
You know, you shouldn't hurt my feelings on podcasts like this.
True. All right, gin and piss, although gin and tonic would be better. I hope you're proud of yourselves. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, sounds like we did something. Mm-hmm. I was down to listening to only one other financial podcast, and then he lists it, but I'm not going to list it. And I have canceled that one, too. Many times when they would cover a topic or answer a question, they would give very little info. So incomplete, off fraught, based on what I've learned from you guys, that I just found it frustrating to listen. Since I listen when walking the dogs, people seeing me would think I was a crazy guy yelling at the... Oh, I guess he was yelling as he was listening. Mm-hmm. I do that sometimes. Okay.
That's not surprising.
Anyways, I guess, like I said, it was a non-question question. I think he was just giving us a compliment. I think that's what we call that, a compliment. Mm. But I do like your idea, listener, of retirement planning with Jim and the Fat Man.
That's not his idea. Gin and tonic was his idea.
But he meant.
Okay, well, yeah.
Maybe we should open it up for votes. We'll let our listeners decide. Should we change the name to Retirement Planning with Gin and Tonic, Retirement Planning with Jim and Chris, or Retirement Planning with Jim and the Fat Man? He's looking at me like he wants to kill me.
Chalk this up to him being medicated.
I don't know what I'm doing right now. I'm just going crazy. Okay, let's get into a real question. But thank you, listener, for the compliment. Glad you can learn something. Certainly not learning anything right now on this little tirade. But okay, this is a longer one, but it's an interesting question. Hi, George Clooney. Steve. Did I call you Steve?
Yeah, you call me Steve all the time.
Hi, George Clooney, Steve, and Joe, a.k.a. Jim, Chris, and Joe. Mm-hmm. Love the show. Thanks for continuing to consistently churn out great content. Obviously, he must be a new listener. Okay, can you analyze a... Hopefully, you will be willing and able to assist on an RMD question as it relates to a deferred variable annuity, which have since been annuitized. I'm trying to read all this to make sure I get it correctly. My mother is 68 and has a traditional IRA spread across a handful of different mutual funds. She also has two deferred variable annuities, which have both since been annuitized. Oh, okay. Annuitized under their guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit rider. Mm-hmm. Both annuities are within an IRA. She has no other forms of tax-deferred vehicles, which would be subject to RMDs. Well, the mom's 68, so at least he's planning this earlier. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's better than 78 coming to this conclusion.
The traditional IRA has a value of 250. Okay, so the mom has $250,000 in a traditional IRA. Annuity A, also in an IRA, has an account value of $350. And annuity B has an account value of $210. These are the actual currently reported account values for the annuity, mm-hmm. not the benefit base on which the guaranteed income will be based. Annuity A pays her a fixed $30,000 per year. Annuity B pays a fixed $13,000 a year for life. Both are paid as a single life, no period certain, no joint and survivor. Assuming she lives long enough, the account values of the annuity will eventually be depleted and reach zero, but her payments will continue. Mm-hmm. Before I read on, folks, let me stop here because this is a more advanced question than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. What he's talking about is he's got a mom, as we all do. His mom has a regular IRA with about $250,000 in it.
Yep.
Then she has two IRAs that contain annuities inside them. Mm-hmm. The annuities are variable annuities. I'm not going to get into what a variable annuity is, but it has a special feature that he referenced, the guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit. What that is it's a option that some annuities will add that at a given age, the insurance company will allow you to withdraw from that annuity, ergo from the IRA, a certain amount of money every year, and it usually doesn't go up. A lot of annuity salesmen on these types of annuities will mislead you into thinking it can go up. Newer annuities, it's any annuity you buy after 2009, it ain't going up. If you bought the annuity in 2003, 4, 5, some of those old riders had a potential for it to go up. But the chances of the income actually increasing, Chris, are very, very,
very
slim.
Yeah.
So essentially what these insurance companies do, remember, one of her annuities was worth $210, the other was worth $350. On the 351, she's getting $30,000 a year. So simple math, assuming the annuity had no growth, it didn't drop, it didn't rise, it just stayed level, there's $350,000 in it, she's getting $30,000 a year as a withdrawal benefit, that annuity will stay open for a little bit more than 11 years. Now, the reality is that annuity will stay open no way near 11 years. Because the fees on these annuities are quite high. So even though she is removing probably about, 7-8% of the account balance she's removing every year, the fees are probably around another 2-3%. And that means she's probably removing closer to 9, 10, 11.5%. I give it a wide berth here, folks, because I don't see the annuity in front of me, but there are fees in that,
right,
Chris.
Yep.
So chances are that annuity with the withdrawal benefit will stay open for about 8 or 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then there'll be no more money left.
Uh-oh.
But the benefit of that annuity is, as long as you withdraw no more than what they told you you could, and once that dollar amount is set, most annuities it'll lock in for. However, I have seen some annuities that will only pay at a certain level for a certain number of years and then it drops. So you have to be very careful. But let's just assume this annuity says, hey, as long as you take out $30,000 a year, if your account reaches zero, because face it, listeners, all's what they're doing is giving you
your money.
Yeah. It's not coming from them. They hold your annuity. They're taking about 2-3% a year in fees out of it. So they're taking the fee out. And actually, the fee is based on a different balance, not your account balance. It's based on a different, much higher balance. I don't want to bore you with it. We'll have to go deep into these products as an EDU show. And it's as the account balance drops, the fee stays the same, so it's a larger and larger and larger percent of the account balance.
Right.
It's not that when, let's just say they were taking a 3% fee, folks, and the account is down from $350,000 to $100,000. They're not taking just $3,000. The fee is actually based on a much higher account balance, and in reality, when it's down to $100,000, they're still taking the higher amount.
Right. Could be taking 6 or 7% or more of the $100,000 that's in there at that point because the fee doesn't drop with the actual account balance.
Now, before y'all run out there and say, that's a badass idea. Who would ever want to do that? I hate those products. I'll admit a lot of the newer ones I don't like either. But in full and fair disclosure, yours truly purchased one for himself in 07 as a deferred annuity. I don't know if it's the same one that his mom has. I doubt it. I'm not going to tell you the insurance company. I'm not going to tell you the product because it's not offered anymore. It was only open for a little while. But it had what I thought was a really good income benefit. When I turn it on, I'm going to get, Chris, about $16,000 a year, according to my calculations. Mm-hmm. I also know the account is going to reach zero. I want it to. I don't honestly care what the fee is. Fee could be 100%. Take it all. I don't care. I bought it for the income guarantee. Right. I know exactly what I'm going to get at age 70. I'm going to turn mine on at 70, although I'm toying with the idea of 65. As my health declines, it seems, maybe I'll turn it on earlier. The point is, listeners, when I added that to my retirement plan, I don't have a pension. I wanted to create a little bit of additional monies. Also with me, when I was a cop, I never paid into Social Security. And then when I started my own business, been doing this 20 years, I didn't make much money at first, Chris. Mm-hmm. I paid hardly nothing into Social Security. So if you add up all my Social Security, it ain't that much. Mm-hmm. Because, again, my peak earnings years when I was a police officer, we never paid into Social Security. So I wanted to get additional income, so I bought that annuity for the income guarantee. I'm going to assume this woman bought it for the income mm-hmm. guarantee as well.
Right.
So when I run into people who have these, when we're doing a retirement analysis, a lot of people don't understand what they have, and we have to research it for them and show them what they have. We often tell them, don't look at that account. Don't look at the 350 she has in one IRA and the 210 in another IRA, because you cannot take out more than the minimum withdrawal amount. Remember, it's called the guaranteed withdrawal benefit.
Well, you technically could, but then you blow up the guarantee, right? You don't get the income.
No, Chris is right. So I kind of misspoke there. You could take out more. And here's generally how it works. If you take out an additional $30,000 and she's got 300 in there, I'm trying to do round math here. $30,000 represents 10% of the account balance. Your income will drop by 10%.
For that point forward.
From that point forward. Mm-hmm. So you got to be...
If you're taking it, that's, and this, you probably have the wrong tool or product for what you're wanting. If you spent the money to get the rider to get this guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit, hopefully that was the goal, is to get that amount of income or that withdrawal coming back to you. Now, he says they're annuitized.
He's wrong on that.
He's not. If it's a if it's a withdrawal benefit, that's the whole point. It's not annuitized.
And that's what his question becomes. So yeah. I'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to explain to our listeners how these riders work. You put in money. Many of the riders will grow your income benefit differently than your account balance. Your account balance is tied to performance of the annuity investments themselves. But your income benefit is generally guaranteed, and they show you every year you keep this annuity open, this is how much income you will get guaranteed. And they generally will have a chart and show you at age 55, you get this, at 56, 57, 58, all the way. So they're offering this as a guarantee to the income. But unlike a traditional SPIA, single premium immediate annuity, if the mother had bought one of those or two of those, one for 350 and one for 210, she would have got more money. That I can tell you. A SPIA will pay more income, but the account is actually quote unquote annuitized, which is what Chris was alluding to. Annuitized in a traditional income annuity, a SPIA, for instance, single premium immediate annuity, or in a QLAC or in a DIA, deferred income annuity, and QLAC is qualified longevity annuity contracts. Those are special deferred annuity for IRAs. Any of those, SPIAs, DIAs, and QLACs, oh my, kind of like lions, tigers, and bears, oh my. SPIAs, DIAs, and QLACs, Chris, they're an irrevocable decision.
Right.
When you quote-unquote annuitize, you voluntarily give up control. So the mother would have given up control of her $210,000 and her $350,000. In return, the insurance company will give you an income guarantee and pay you every year, just like these withdrawal benefit annuities. But unlike a withdrawal benefit annuity, she can't just say, forget the income, give me whatever is left. Give me whatever is in this annuity that hasn't been paid to me yet. So a withdrawal annuity was designed, Chris, for those people who don't want to give up control of their money. Mm-hmm. But there's a cost to that, folks. You get a lot less income. Insurance companies will say, yeah, you can close this withdrawal annuity anytime you want. Take out the rest of your money. We don't care. But you take out 100% of the money, 100% of the income stops. You take out 50% of the money, your income drops by 50%. That's generally how it works. As long as you don't take out, though, more than what the withdrawal benefit is, if your account reaches zero, the insurance companies will continue to pay you for as long as you live. Now, the SPIA will pay more, generally 20 to 40% more, so it's not a small amount. You can get a lot more money out of a SPIA. But you give up the money right away. You annuitize it right away. To me, if you really want the income, you should evaluate a SPIA. Now, you might be saying, well, why did you buy one? I bought one in 07. 2004, 5, 6, and 7 was a time that will never exist right. anymore.
It's the heyday.
In these withdrawal benefit annuity world. The income benefits were through the roof because the market was doing well. The economy was doing well. We hadn't had the 08 crash yet. The insurance companies were high like everyone else was high on the value of their portfolios and their investments. And good times are here to stay for anyone. And they were offering, Chris, some withdrawal benefits that were on par with what a SPIA would pay. And for the ability to call the deal off and get your money, I thought was compelling. Mm-hmm. Today, it's not so much.
No.
So that's why I have one. But I also don't generally use them anymore. To me, if you are worried about living too long, but also worried about needing your money too soon, you've got two opposing concerns here. Gee, Jim, I want some guaranteed lifetime income, but I worry that I might not live a very long time, and I want to make sure I can get access to my money. Well, what are you more worried about, living a long time or not living a long time? The withdrawal benefit appeals to people, but I'm just a little hesitant on them. That's all. I think you can get more bang for your buck nowadays with SPIAs. So anyways, he said annuitized. The accounts are not annuitized. And he gets into that in the next paragraph. And the reason I'm telling you they're not annuitized, listeners, in case you missed the boat here, the mother can call the deal off at any time. She doesn't have to continue with the $30,000 and $13,000 a year. She can call up the insurance company and take the $350,000 out of one and the $210,000 out of the other, and she'll forgo the $43,000 a year for the rest of her life, mm-hmm. no matter how long she lives. In a SPIA, you can't do that.
Right.
Okay, so he goes on. My question is, what happens with regards to the required minimum distribution when my mom turns 70 and a half in a couple of years? My understanding is the payments from the annuities will satisfy their respective RMDs. In actuality, the payments are much higher than mm-hmm. what my mom's RMDs would otherwise be.
Right, from those two accounts.
As such, can this excess distribution from the annuities be used to satisfy the RMDs from her $250,000 traditional IRA that doesn't have any annuities? I know you can take an aggregate RMD from one IRA if you have multiple IRAs. But I'm wondering, for annuities like these, are they kind of cordoned off into their own little silo? like his, he writes very well, mm-hmm. onto their own little silo, such that RMD requirements from the other annuities can't be commingled. So, I got good news.
Mm-hmm. He can in this case.
He can in this case.
Because it's not how he described. If they were truly annuitized, no. But the fact that they're not annuitized, that account balance is what determines it. And in this case, the withdrawal benefits, and this is typical for situations like this, the withdrawal benefit is set high enough that it would meet the RMD. If that was a standalone account, it's going to be bigger and that account balance is going to be dropping over time because of the withdrawals and the fees, of course. So that amount should satisfy it. And a lot of the contracts, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the contracts state the minimum withdrawal benefit will be a certain amount or the RMD that would be required from the IRA at a minimum.
Yes.
They usually say that to protect themselves.
They're all what they call RMD friendly.
Right, RMD friendly, so that the contract, if for some reason it doesn't perform well over time, they guarantee that you'll be able to take a withdrawal that will satisfy the RMD for that one account if it was a standalone account. In this case, he's right. These numbers, when you do the math, the payout, the withdrawal benefit is higher than the RMD for that individual
account.
Right.
Well, let's look. Let's walk our listeners through this. So let's just look at the $350,000 one, and she's taking $30,000 out. What is 3.7% of $350,000?
$12,950.
Okay. So her RMD, folks, at 70.5 will be about $13,000.
Yep.
We're just looking at one annuity, we're looking at the other one. So she's got $350,000 in the annuity. It is not annuitized. Again, what does that mean? It means the annuity has an account balance, mm-hmm. and the owner of that annuity can cancel the contract and remove the account balance.
Right.
That is a non-annuitized annuity. An annuitized annuity is where the owner has an account, but there is no longer an account balance that they have access to. Instead, they only have access to a guaranteed stream of income. That's an annuitized annuity. There is no account balance on an annuitized annuity. Nada, none, no account balance. His mom's IRA annuity has an account balance. It's not annuitized. And think about it. The annuity company, Chris, calls it a withdrawal benefit. They're telling you right off the bat what they're letting you do.
Right.
Withdraw.
Your own money.
Your own money.
Right.
It's all they're doing. They're only giving you your money. They're not on the hook for anything until the account reaches zero. Now, they know a good portion. They've got this all figured out, folks. They know a good portion of the people buying these will die before the account balance reaches zero.
Mm-hmm.
And they're never really on the hook to using other monies to pay this off. They would have to use their money. These annuities don't operate like a SPIA where all the money goes into a general account.
Right.
These are separate accounts, and your money is sequestered off in a silo, like he says, at the insurance company. It's specifically yours. And when that money runs out, now the insurance company has to take money from their general account and stop paying their money. So it doesn't work like a SPIA, and that's why SPIAs pay more. SPIAs pay mortality credits. These annuities pretty much don't. You don't have mortality credits. Your money's not really being pooled together with these annuities. Mm-hmm. So, because the annuity is not annuitized, folks, there's an account balance, this listener's mom can say, well, wait a minute. I got a $250,000 IRA over here, and let's ignore the third annuity. I want to keep this simple. I got a $250,000 IRA over here. What's 3.7% of $250,000?
$9,250.
So she's got to take out $9,250 from that IRA. But she has another IRA with $350 that she's going to take out about $13,000 from.
She's forced to take $13,000.
From that annuity, from the annuity in, IRA. Jeez, I can't think right now. Mm-hmm. What is her RMD?
$13,000.
$13,000. So she's taking out $30,000.
Right.
She only needs to take out 13. So she has an extra $17,000. Because that annuity has not been annuitized, she can take that extra $17,000 and apply it to the $9,250 that she has to take out from her other IRA. And she doesn't have to take out one red cent from that IRA. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens if this woman lives a long time, and I hope for this listener's sake she does, she lives a long time, and we already said she's taking out a pretty big withdrawal mm-hmm. as
so
a percentage.
8 or 9 years, it's going to be zero.
Exactly. I'm figuring 8 or 9 years mm-hmm. because of the fees associated with these annuities as well. She's going to be 77, should still be alive. What happens now? The $30,000 continues, but right. what happens now?
It's effectively immediately annuitized at that point. The insurance company is now paying her their money instead of hers back.
There's no more account balance.
And there's no more account balance on which to calculate an RMD for that account. So the IRS says, you know what? Whatever the payment is, whatever the annuity payment is, and it's called an annuity payment at this point because it's
not a withdrawal benefit anymore.
Right. There's no withdrawal to make. The payment equals the RMD for that one account alone. You no longer can take it and apply. There's no excess because the IRS has deemed the dollar for dollar, the RMD is in fact the payment that's being paid to you by the insurance company. At that point, now she's got to worry about meeting RMDs for these other accounts with them or other withdrawal benefits or whatever from other accounts. But this one will only be able to satisfy through its excess withdrawals additional RMDs until the point where it's annuitized, which is when the account balance hits zero.
Exactly. So when that happens, the $30,000 becomes the RMD for that now annuitized annuity. Because mm-hmm. remember, annuitized annuity, no account balance. It's been just income. So then she will have to start taking RMDs from the other IRA. But until then, she's probably going to be able to avoid having to take RMDs from that IRA and allow it to continue to grow. Now, I'm not saying she should. She should do some tax planning around that and see if it makes sense to start reducing it or using QCDs and sending qualified charitable distribution to charities directly from that IRA if she wanted. There's other tax strategies she can start thinking of, but that's how those products work. So I think we should do an EDU show on that and explain how these riders work. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then he asks separately, and I think you might have talked on this on your show before, but I can't go back and find it. I don't know if he can't go back and find it or he's gone back and can't find it. But anyways, for annuities like these, what year-end value are the RMDs going to be based upon? My mom's advisor, who is mainly an investment guy taking 1.25% of her assets. That's a pretty high 1.25.
Hope he's doing a lot. Hope he's not taking 1.25% of the balance in those annuity accounts.
No, but those annuities generally will be paying him about 1% as well. That's why I said the fees are fairly high. So he's probably taking 1.25% of her $250,000, and he's being paid a trail, probably around 1% on the other $500,000 in these two annuities. So guy's doing all right for himself, taking care of this guy's mom.
Hope he gives good advice on RMDs.
Okay, well, actually, he kind of goes into what we just said. So her current advisor, mainly an investment guy taking his 1.25% of AUM, said once the account values are depleted to zero, there are officially no RMDs since the account values are zero. But conversely, I thought you said at one point in a case like this, the issuing insurance company will calculate an actuarial value each year, accounting for the payment amounts and the annuitant's life expectancy rates, etc., and that this value is what the RMDs would be based on. You didn't hear that on this podcast.
No.
That's why you've gone back and you can't find it. We would have never said that. There is no actuarial determination. Once the account balance reaches zero, we talked about this before from a woman listener called Natalie Choate, who is probably the female version of Ed Slott. If Ed became a woman, he would be Natalie. Natalie is incredibly smart. She's an attorney in Boston. Huge Patriots fan, I bet. Mm-hmm. Just want to throw that out there. And she wrote a whole book on this. But her point is, when an annuity becomes annuitized, defined contribution rules no longer apply, defined benefit rules apply. And defined benefit rules say the annuity benefit or the pension benefit can satisfy the RMD for that account and that account only.
Right.
So that's how that would work. Thanks.
There's
advance.
Other cases where there's actuarially determined values of annuity payments, but not in this case. That's not what this
right,
is
that's
all about.
The, yes, that's there are completely there different. Are times where you would use those. What happens on mm-hmm. these annuities? For see, he's asking when the account balance reaches zero. Prior to reaching zero, listener, this is one good thing. I'm glad I just thought about this. Prior to reaching zero, listener, you cannot go by the December 31st value of your mom's annuity. That might have been what you heard us say. Any type of annuity, you have to use the actuarial value for the RMD purposes provided by the insurance company. Even if you have an actual account value, the IRS says the insurance company has to interpolate. Is that a word? Or am I just screwing
interpolate.
Up?
Interpolate.
It is a
mm-hmm.
word?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Did I use it correctly? The IRS says the annuity company has to interpolate the value of the embedded income benefits and add it to the account balance for RMD purposes.
Yeah, that would work. Yeah.
That would work.
I think
excellent.
That would work.
Mm-hmm. I'm nailing the English language on this mm-hmm. show today. So what they're going to do before it becomes annuitized, before it reaches zero and defined benefit rules apply, you cannot use the December 31st value, the year-end statement value. You have to get a hold of the insurance company. And when your mom turns 70, she's not quite there yet, most insurance companies will send on that mm-hmm. year-end statement the value for RMDs
the purposes, right.
or they will send it as a separate letter in early January. They'll just say, hey, for RMD purposes, the value of your annuity is this. And it might be higher or lower than the actual account balance. That's the number you need to use because that's the number that the mm-hmm. insurance company will report to the IRS.
Now, if this is the only annuity that you have and it's all in an IRA like this, the payment, the withdrawal benefit is going to satisfy that RMD almost for sure. Unless, I mean, could somebody be put into an RMD unfriendly?
I've never heard of one.
I've never heard of one either, but where it's the case here is what they're trying to do, which is apply an excess withdrawal to satisfy the RMD of another account. And that's where this value for RMD calculations is going to come into play because that's going to tell you what's going to satisfy the RMD for that account. And then the extra you took, or she took in this case, the mother, can be applied to other RMD requirements for other IRAs, not for 401ks or anything like that, but for other IRAs that she might have.
Okay, well, I think we covered that, but I think I'll do an EDU show on these withdrawal benefits and get people mm-hmm. to understand how they work. Some older annuities have very, very good ones. Some newer annuities, not so good ones. But they exist. They're out there. And if you understand how they work, they can reduce your required minimum distributions. I know mm-hmm. in our practice, we do this a lot with people, show them how they can reduce their RMDs. If they come to us with one of these annuities and we start explaining it to them, then they're like, oh, wow, okay, so I can use this excess and reduce how much I have to take out. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that filled up a show. We're sure we were going to make it when you kind of got on a roll there with this last question. So got yeah. a nice full Q&A show.
Yeah, well, it came in. We yeah. got three answered, didn't we?
Four.
Well, one well, was a couple, not a
yeah,
real
that's
one.
True.
One was the... And remember, folks, vote. Should we be retirement planning with Gin and Tonic? Retirement planning with Jim and Chris, that's rather boring. Or retirement planning with, you get your little clap thing, can you play it in a second? Retirement planning with Jim and the Fat Man. No, I wanted the clapping.
Oh, no, that one I don't have anymore. How about the Retirement and IRA Show, Q&A edition?
With Jim and the Fat Man.
Here, let me try again. Oh, sorry.
Right.
No, there's something broken over here.
Something's not working.
Okay. Well, we want to remind everybody that we are practicing retirement planners in Northern Colorado that help clients throughout the country. If you're interested in talking to us a little bit more about our retirement planning work, feel free to reach out to us on our website, jimhelps.com, or you can go to chrishelps.com. But jimhelps.com, Jim always points out, is a little, one fewer character than Chris Helps. Two fewer characters. Wow, I had to count it out there. So Jim is, it's a really short name for shorter people. And on that website, you can find a way to contact us. You can use the good old-fashioned phone on there, email. There's a contact form, and there's a way to actually book a what we call a coffee and a second opinion on a calendar app. That app doesn't always have all of our availability on there. So if you can't find something on there, certainly just reach out to us, and we'll have Laura or Shauna get back to you and schedule a time for you where you can talk to us a little bit more about what we offer, what your questions might be, and see if there's something we can actually do to help you with your particular retirement planning questions, since that is our niche. What else? I think that's about it. So thanks for hanging with us. We really appreciate everybody listening, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.